Hello, and welcome to the Mixed Media Podcast for Wednesday, September 9th. I'm Christopher Wynn, Deputy Editor for FD, the style magazine of the Dallas Morning News, and I'm joined in the studio by Lauren Smart, Arts and Culture Editor for the Dallas Observer. Hello, Lauren.
Hello.
When Lauren came today, I made her walk up the stairs because our elevator is still acting funny. So
yeah, I got my workout. I'm good for the rest of the day. Yeah.
We're going to be talking about that later, which I'll explain. Chris Bogner is not with us today. He is somewhere in the air right now, en route from Venice to Toronto for yet another film festival. He phoned in last week, if you were listening, probably wearing a silk robe in his hotel room and said hello to us.
Lucky him.
Yeah.
Seeing the world, watching films. Good to be Chris Wagner.
It is good to be Chris Wagner. We miss you, man. He'll be back next week. But here to try and help us fill the emptiness in our hearts is guest co-host Mike Marshall, books and more editor at the Dallas Morning News. Mike, how many titles do you wear these days?
As many as they ask. It's what one does in a mixed media world.
That's true. Yeah, yeah. Books, healthy living, arts, yeah. Features, you do it all.
I'd fly from Venice to Toronto if they asked me.
And in a bathrobe. They should.
I know, how do we get that gig? Also joining us today are two other Morning News staffers, Leslie Barker, who writes about healthy living. Hello, Leslie.
Hello.
Speaking of us getting our workouts in today.
Does that count? The stairs?
It certainly
count
counts
as a workout?
Yes, it counts as a lot, yes. And actually, I heard that to get to the third floor, you have to go to the fourth floor and take the elevator down.
You do, because the elevator's not working.
Oh, okay.
Lauren went up three flights in heels, by the way. And
that's
some very
right.
sassy boots.
That's right. Yeah,
they are very sassy boots. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
So Leslie's here, and we also have Christine Tini Riccardi, who is a digital communities content coordinator with Guide Live. That's a mouthful.
Yeah. These days, I just go by beer drinker and music lover.
I love that. And what's the name? Is just a nickname from your from
Tini?
Christine? Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it is. But it's funny. It's a nickname that my parents gave me when I was a kid. So growing up, everybody always called me Tini, and I only heard Christine when I was in trouble.
So on today's show, we'll talk about how Dallas libraries are striving to survive in a digital world. Should be an interesting topic. Next, workout culture. Is all of the stuff distracting us from actually working out? And is our fixation on having the perfect body making us unhealthy? Finally, what's the deal with craft beer? Dallas is obsessed with homegrown brews, and a new community is emerging as a result. We will get to all of that. But first, I have an announcement. We have our first iTunes reviews. Mixed Media.
Wow. I feel so special.
Yeah. We had just one. I was shocked
Wait. Was it a good review?
Well, as journalists, you will all appreciate that the comment section is usually a scary place. You don't want to look on your stories.
Yeah.
So when I saw that we had one, I kind of held my breath and I was like, oh, Lord, here we go. But I want to read it because it's actually very nice and interesting. H.H. Fanzo, not my mother, I don't know who that is, says, quote, the hosts cover a range of topics, both high and lowbrow, with wit and intelligence. It's not only about Dallas culture, but about culture at large. So I thought that was very
nice.
That's very nice.
Hey, that is nice. Yeah. I like that. Oh, all right, Brian. I agree, Brian Elledge. So, and then just recently we had another one by Podcast Nerd, who writes, quote, much more mass appeal than expected, which almost sounds like a slam at first.
I'm
like, yeah, much more mass appeal than expected. Not just local topics related to Dallas, very well done and hosted by interesting, smart people.
No, smart people, that's about me, though.
That's a shout out to you.
Those don't even sound like they were typed in all caps.
I know, there's no flaming or shouting
on this. Maybe the podcast world is a mild-mannered, like the people there aren't quite so angry as internet world.
It could be.
Maybe
because we don't get into politics. I don't know.
Maybe it's just that the smartest and best-looking listeners in all of podcastdom are listening to us right now.
Yes, we're pandering to you. If you want to leave us a comment, you can on iTunes, and that certainly helps our show. If there's something you don't like, if you want to be mean, maybe you should just email us instead at mixedmedia@dallasnews.com. All right, let's get started. One quick thing as we go in. We normally do our touts at the end, but I'm going to do mine up front. For a reason. I'm going to be recommending this week a show in Denton Saturday night at Dan Silverleaf that has four Texas bands. It's Air Review, Doug Burr, Bethan, and Telegraph Canyon. And so I've pulled a song from each artist to kick off our segments today. So I will be touting as we go along today. So the first one coming up is going to be Air Review. So let's get started.
Realize that I am America's son.
All right, Dallas Libraries. Lauren Smart has a cover story in this week's Dallas Observer that is all about Dallas Libraries and what they're doing to stay relevant and survive. I love libraries, so I was really intrigued to read this. So Lauren, tell us kind of about the story, how this came about, and what it's about.
So my original idea was something really far removed from what it became. I originally was going to do just weekly dispatches. It was really just an excuse to get out of the office. I was going to do weekly dispatches from each of the 29 branches of the Dallas Library. I thought, well, I don't want to be in the office today. I'm going to go spend an afternoon at the Oaklawn Library. And then that turned into I could do these descriptive bloggy pieces that just sort of talk about what the library looks like and who's there and all of this.
I would totally read, by the way, but I'm kind of a nerd.
Oh, and it's still something I'm like, well, I might go back to that. But that turned into, so I went to a few of them and started talking to some of the people that work at the library, and they had a lot more to say about what they were doing in the 21st century than I expected. And I also noticed something very odd, which was that at most of the libraries, every single computer is in use, but like almost no one is looking at books, which I thought was really it kind of made me sad for a minute. And then I thought, well, that actually makes a lot of sense if you think about how we function today and how we consume information and maybe even what a library is.
Right.
So this
I even see sometimes people will be parked out in front of the library in the parking lot at the branches, soaking up the free Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's become such a pivotal part of what people use the library for, myself included. If my Wi-Fi's out and I don't want to go sit at a coffee shop, well, I can go to the library. But the Dallas Library has this really, really sad story that it has a lot of twists and turns. There's a lot to it. So basically, that's where the cover story came from. I started spending time in libraries and really wanted to figure out what was going on and what they were doing and how they were surviving, in a world of Kindles and iPads and stuff.
Are you a big, Mike Rochelle, a big library user with kids and all of that? Has the library been a big part of your family?
Yeah, I mean, since the beginning of time, I've always been we moved around a lot when I was a kid, and it seems that I remember the first thing that I always did was got a library card from somewhere, and I still have certificates from summer library programs, but from having read, you got a little gold star for reading each book, and if you got 5 gold stars, you got a certificate or something like that. Which I guess is kind of the problem, is that everybody kind of assumes that a library, that's what it's for. It's where you go to check out books, and if you're not imaginative, you don't think of it as much else.
Yeah. So that was my impression. I'll admit something too. I hadn't been to a library that wasn't the library at college or grad school since childhood. I don't think I had entered a library as an adult person with a job until I started doing this sort of project thing.
Right.
And part of that was sort of for that reason. I thought, well, I can buy all the books that I really want to read. I as we've talked about a few weeks ago, and I do that. I buy all of the books that I want to read. And I wasn't using libraries in any kind of way as an adult.
Well, there's certainly that moment as someone, I'm sort of a big nerd and I go to libraries, and there was that moment over the years where libraries begin, first the card catalogs kind of quietly went away, and now you could go onto a computer and look up your books electronically, and then libraries began offering books on loan via computer. In other words, you could check out a book on your Kindle, or online. So they began to make those steps toward becoming modern and digital, in some ways paralleling what the newspaper industry is going through as we kind of transition from a print-centric to a digital world. And then I think the moment it seems like, Lauren, that your piece comes in is that's not enough.
Yeah.
And it's like, what does a library now have to become or do in order to be relevant?
Right. Well, and if you compare it to newspaper, that comparison makes a lot of sense, because if you think about like 2008 during the recession, which the Kindle was released in late 2007, I believe. Mm-hmm. So in 2008, the recession hits, and you know, as usual, you talk. The first thing that gets cut is the libraries. But at the same time, the same thing's happening in newspaper and staffing at newspapers.
Right.
The first thing they're thinking is what are the loose ends? But for a city, unfortunately, what became the loose ends were the libraries.
Right.
So you cut, the Dallas Library lost 50% of its funding in 2008. And that was about almost half of the staff. And all of the library branches were down to basically one full-time staffer working 40 hours a week to keep the branch open 40 hours a week. So it wasn't open on the week. None of them were open on the weekends. They weren't open at night, which meant that, you know, professional people weren't using them. And so, and at the same time, they're losing technology funding. They're not buying as many new books as they had been buying. And I mean, slowly the Dallas Public Library became the most poorly funded library system in the country.
And what they did in response to that is really surprising, and I wonder if you could talk about that. And I loved how you kind of opened your story with people changing diapers in the basement of the library.
Right. So, yeah, so one of the things that happened when they – basically what happened is that the Dallas Public Library lost its funding, but the people who didn't stop coming were all the homeless people.
Right.
They're homeless customers.
And if you've ever been, especially the downtown branch, yeah, you know that's definitely a thing.
Yeah, and I got a bunch of emails actually this morning from people saying, no, this has been a problem everywhere and we're trying to fix it. But anyway, so they were trying to figure out what they were going to do, and it was a big problem. I mean, they were weekly getting phone calls. They were calling the police, and they were issuing, you know, there were assaults, and there was a lot of really nasty things happening at the downtown library.
So it was more than just an eyesore or an inconvenience for the more affluent people coming in. There was actual crime and problems happening.
Yeah. Yeah. So and this woman, Jasmine Africa Wallace, she's this sort of like lovely, lovely person, and she had been hired on in an community administrative position, and she and the people who run that downtown library, they got together and thought, well, what can we do? And they came up with the most simple idea, which is that they started a program called Coffee and Conversations, and they just get all of their homeless customers into a room and say, what do you need from us? What do you use the library for? How can we help? What can we do for you? What are the resources that you need?
What a radical shift.
Yeah. And it's not totally, it's not 100% better. There's still a few issues, but you definitely see a respect level that has grown in the homeless customers' use of the library. And there were a lot of other initiatives that they took too. The DISD dropped their ESL GED programs that were happening in the Dallas libraries. They were being taught at the libraries, and the libraries thought, well, with help from the Friends of the Dallas Public Library, that, you know, we can do this. We can still do this. And so they kept those classes. And now they have a GED testing center that is fully funded by, I think it's Atmos Energy. So, I mean, they just have done these sort of like novel things that are surprisingly, they seem easy.
Right.
And they've worked.
The most dramatic thing they did, or the most novel thing I was surprised by, is they're doing a podcast.
Yeah.
Near and dear to
podcasts
our hearts.
Podcasts are the answer.
Yeah. So tell us about this is a very unusual podcast. Tell us about this one.
Yeah. So one of the first people who showed up at that Coffee and Conversations program was a guy named Rashad Dickerson. And I talk about him in the story. He's like the most charming, wonderful guy. He's just so nice and cute and funny and personable. And he was very interested in participating in these programs. And again, Afrikawala came up with the idea of using him as the host of a podcast. It's called Street View. And he basically, for the first year, the first year or so of it, they've done social services. They've aimed it at sort of like helping the homeless customers be aware of what social services they can take advantage of. And so they've brought in a lot of social services providers. And actually now, I haven't talked to him in a couple of weeks, but he has a house and a job. And, you know, he's like gone through this full transition, and he gives a lot of love, at least, to the library for the consistency in his life.
Is the podcast is it directed at the homeless community or people who support? Because the obvious question becomes, how are they supposed to access this podcast on their new iPhone Touch? Or, you know, how are, you know, is it for people who support that community?
Right. So it's available. They have it on, I think it's a WordPress site right now, mm-hmm. as an audio file. And I know that they were interested in coming up with, so a lot of what the homeless customers use the library computers for are to catch up on entertainment and news.
Real Housewives.
Yeah. Well, anything that's on YouTube, right? Yeah. So Jasmine is thinking there's got to be a way to get this on YouTube so that, because this is what they're hearing at these programs, is how do you listen to the podcast? A lot of them say no. And they say, you know, we can't, for some reason, it's like this tick of like not going to turn on the audio file, but I would listen to it if it were on YouTube. And so there's
that funny, yeah.
Is funny, like, but I think that's another thing we take for granted is how quickly we've adapted to the idea of having podcasts on our phone and that being the way that we access them.
True.
And it's easy to think that that's absurd that they only would use it on YouTube. But if you haven't had this adaptation period of, well, I got a laptop and then I got an iPhone or an iPod and then an iPhone and I have always had access to this, then how would you function?
Right.
You know?
Well, you kind of made that point, I think, in the story. Didn't you say something about the, you know, 115 years ago, the idea of a library was it was a place where you kept the books. And now it's a place where you go for the access to the, not, you know, because the knowledge was in the books. And now you go for the access. Is that
yeah.
where you, I mean, you've been hanging out there. I mean, is that where you think it's going, what's going to grow into someday? It's a place where, you know, if you don't have the newest tech device, that it's where you'd go to get access to one? Or?
Yeah. And without blaspheming books, I actually think it won't be that far. It wouldn't surprise me if in 10 years, a library is a huge computer bay with, you know, all these community resources that also happens to have books.
Didn't they had, where was it, San Antonio? You probably read about that. I think they opened a new library in San Antonio that is, it's bookless, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
It's exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's so far removed. And what was interesting to me, too, is I read several books. I've been working on this story for a few months now. I think I told you this.
Trying to get out of the office.
Yeah. I've been using this as an excuse not to work now. But I read a few books about, you know, Andrew Carnegie and what he was trying to do. And he laid out all these principles of like, look, the library is a place for everyone to have the information. And like you said, information used to be in books. And it is still, but it's not. That's when was the last time you were like, I need to learn about the Civil War, and you didn't look at Wikipedia first?
Well, yeah. I would never look at Wikipedia because you're talking to the wrong guy there.
Yeah,
and it does scare me a little bit. I'm going to say so. I think I'm here to be the crusty old guy. just for the record,
add that to your list of titles.
So yeah, so just as the official keeper of the old guard. And now I love computers and I love my iPhone and all that stuff. And but. It does scare me, this idea of a bookless world, only for the reason that I you know, a week doesn't go by that I don't encounter, you know, some off bio of an author, an up and coming author, or maybe, you know, or maybe a well established one that says, how did they get themselves to authordom from from basic roots? And almost always there's a library involved, maybe a school library, maybe it's a city library, it's a librarian, but you know, people who go and say, wait a minute, this is a place where I realized that knowledge was important. I realized that the world was bigger than what I'd been seeing at home, and that there were bigger ideas than what I was being exposed to from my parents. And I worry that if it gets reduced down to just a screen, to just the idea that, oh, all we need to do is give people screens, that we lose some of that specialness.
Yeah.
I mean, those Carnegie libraries, you knew you were in you were in something special. It's like, wow. And it told you something if you could walk in there and say, wow, I have access to all of this. I'm an equal with anyone in the world. I think you lose that when you're all just getting iPad screens or something.
And you lose the smell, too. Yeah, there's something about this fresh smell of the books and the pages and all that kind of thing.
Can I name drop? Yeah, I heard, okay, I didn't talk to her, but she retweeted me once. Judy Blume talks about that.
Oh, boy.
Her childhood library. She's one of these people.
Tells the fourth grade nothing.
Yeah, exactly. No, but she talks about that, the physicality of the book. And I understand that you can, you know, you don't actually need the book to get the knowledge. I mean, you know, I kind of get sometimes I wish for an electronic world, because a good part of my very sexy job is pushing a cart full of books down to the basement.
It's true. I've watched you do it.
Yeah.
In a swimsuit?
In a bathrobe. Yeah. But there's nothing special about, you know, the knowledge when it's on paper, but there is something. I don't know if we've come up with a way to establish that the importance of having a place for knowledge in public life, of a place to think and to celebrate those things. And I'm glad that I was happy to read in your story that the library is working on these things.
Yeah.
And making it accessible to everybody.
Yeah, I think it has to have both. And I think for just those reasons that you're saying, it has to have both, because you have to have this ability to accidentally stumble on something that expands your world. And I have a friend or two who grew up sort of in low-income neighborhoods and got out of high school and self-educated themselves at the library. And these are like 30-year-old men that have done this. Mm. And they do that because they know you can look online, find 100 books you have to have read, and then you can find them all at the library, right? And that is not necessarily something that you're not going to be able to afford the 100 books to buy yourself. And I think it has to have both. I was supposed to publish a story 2 or 3 weeks ago, and it got pushed back for just organizational reasons. And it became super relevant in the last 2 weeks again, because the city manager decided, oh, we need money to fix the roads. Let's take it from the library.
Of course. Yeah.
So I think that's a really unfortunate reality they face, is that they're not glamorous. And so that's the first place we look for money to take money from.
So libraries need to get glamorous. Support your local library. All right. You can read Lauren Smart's cover story on the state of Dallas libraries at dallasobserver.com.
That I am America's son, and I'm not the only one. A red ray, yeah, yeah, hey, why? A red ray, yeah, yeah, hey, why?
So that was the amazing singer-songwriter Doug Burr.
Like that.
I'm enjoying my role as DJ on today's show. So working out, Leslie Barker and I were talking in the hallway recently about fitness and working out, because that's what you talk about with Leslie.
She can talk about a few other things, yes, but probably mostly fitness.
She was opening up and being vulnerable and telling me about her workout clothing obsession. So Leslie, you have kind of a problem, right?
I have many problems, that being among them. No, but I was just telling Christopher that I, like when I go into a store to buy just a pair of regular shoes, I end up buying running shoes, and I'm always looking at, the brooksrunning.com website and the underarmor.com, because for some reason I've really gotten into Under Armour.
Which is your drug of choice now.
It is my drug of choice now. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And because I can usually find, I don't know, something on sale, and it's just kind of nice and bright and cute or whatever. So anyway, but I was also saying that I don't have, probably because I don't have the money to buy some clothes like some people who I talked to for a story that ran in our monthly healthy living section. And it was on people
get,
who were
get
just
that
kind
plug
of,
in
yes,
well.
dallasnews.com/health.
That's right.
anyway, it but it's people who...
Very
they
wise
just,
of you to mention that. That's nice.
Mike's my editor over here, yeah. but anyway, but these
Brilliant
people
idea.
Just had, like this one guy had, I think he said 30 pair of shoes, all different colors, and he lays out his outfits every night
outfits.
Before, yes, his outfits.
That's right.
If the shoes were out or something, then he has to buy another pair just the right color to go with that outfit. And sometimes the manufacturers don't make the same color every year. And
oh, my
so
God.
Sometimes he hangs onto the outfit for a couple of years until the color comes back.
Are the outfits
anyway,
all the same brand, too? Are they like the Nike logos all the way up?
Oh, I think it's mostly color coordinated.
It's more color.
Yeah. He's more into color.
I understand that. Uh-huh.
And then someone else, a woman who wears tutus when she runs, and she has like 15 pair of sparkly skirts that she has. And then someone who just wears, I think, maybe even cotton. You're not supposed
oh
to wear
God.
Cotton, you know?
Cotton.
God forbid. So,
I'd rather have the tutu.
Yeah, so anyway, so no, I do like my workout wear, and I also like my fitness devices. You know, everybody wears a, you wear a watch or you wear a, I have a.
That's right, because it's not about clothing anymore. It's also the accessories and the gadgets.
Yes, exactly. I have on a, I have a Fitbit, and I have a little iPod that also has is a pedometer, and then when I run, I have a Garmin watch that I wear. And I mean, it just
so if you
really,
take those off, will you just disappear?
Yeah, I know. I think I'm just not really myself unless I have them on. And like even to church, I still wear this, but I do wear another bracelet.
This is why. This is why you were the expert for our story on technology obsession, isn't it?
I know, because right. I was a little bit envious of those people. But
didn't what I'm trying to remember? We had you actually did this
oh,
story
I did,
on
yes. it
technology
was on people, obsession, yes.
And
it,
some people can go overboard.
Well, it was people with a bunch of apps, and, yeah. and I don't really use the apps, but I mean just some.
Oh, apps. I think you said abs for
oh,
that.
No. Yeah. I don't have that either.
That's me. I don't use my abs.
Yeah.
Don't,
use
like,
my
hey,
abs
don't
or
pick
my
on
abs.
Me because I've got the abs. No, I don't. But go ahead.
But do you have the apps?
I can get the apps.
Okay.
Can't
but
get the apps.
People,
I can get the apps.
But you know, some of them, we just had to just to quote what they were saying because I was totally confused. Well, you know, the algorithm on this, if it doesn't match the calorie burn on this, then I go with this one instead. And I was like, okay, all I can do is just type what you're saying, but that just kind of completely
that feels like a workout before
me.
You even leave.
Oh, I know,
yeah.
and you know,
maybe like
feel
engineers
better about myself.
Who, yeah, there's some people seem to take their workouts more like an engineering problem to be solved.
And well, Mike said he goes, just curious, what profession are these people? And I said, well, we have two engineers, and but yeah, they do.
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's part of me that can really kind of understand that, just with my my own three little gadgets, but.
Is it also true that you've been trying out a treadmill desk?
Oh, yes. And I, yes, in fact, when Christopher came by and we were discussing this, I was on my treadmill desk, but I think I may have been sitting down because Chris Wagner sits right close to me, and he has a chair that's just the right fit to sit on, to put on my treadmill.
Wait, a chair
on your treadmill?
Yeah, wait. treadmill desk, does that mean you're walking while
I'm walking,
you're, are you
yes.
typing?
I'm typing.
While you're
yes,
walking.
Yes.
And chewing gum.
Yes.
This she's doing a review for us. I have to say, it does, as her editor walking up to her, and you have to envision her head just above the cubicle as she's walking and kind of bobbing up and down.
What
up
are you
and
doing?
And up and down. No, I can't edit her because I get seasick looking at her.
Like, so I just keep walking.
Yeah. So we actually haven't spoken in 6 months.
So how do you feel? Does it feel invigorating? Do you feel like you have more energy? Can we tease your? I know you're working on a story about it, but
yeah, no, we can tease it. It's I guess it probably depends on the rest of my mood. No, I mean for the most part, it's okay. But and, I mean sometimes when I step off it, I do sort of feel like you know like I'm in the fun house or something.
Right.
But and I will say that the longer I've had it, the more longingly I look at my regular chair that just kind of sits there because the treadmill takes up kind of a decent amount of space. And I have a standing desk anyway, and I love my standing desk, but I have a chair that I can sit on when I'm kind of tired of standing. But the treadmill, I'm not using probably as much as I should. And also, I'm really conscious of the annoyance factor, you know, like when with Mike there.
But that she means every time I go by it, I make a Jetsons reference.
and
it's gotten kind of annoying. The annoyance factor is every time her boss sees her on the treadmill desk, he says something about Jane, stop this crazy thing.
And actually, I did have one of those. I did have a Jetson.
Is that a tangent? Yeah, sorry.
No, I did have one because I was talking
people
to someone.
People want
and
valuable
I turned around,
information
I almost
from
went,
you.
You know, like, you know, fell right down. But there is a certain plug that you can just unplug it and it stops automatically.
Get tired. I want to get back to the workout clothes thing for a second because I have this problem too, which is like every time I get back into working out, I think the first thing I need to do is go buy workout clothes.
See, I would say that is the first thing.
Yeah.
Kind of because it makes you feel better about it.
But I think I thought that it would end. I don't go to a gym anymore. I mostly run outside. And I think I thought it would end when I stopped going to. I think I really thought it was like an image thing.
Oh,
And it's
I was
going
to ask, is it because you want to feel more confident in the way you look or because you want to perform better?
Oh, I think for me anyway, working out for me is such a mind game period for me, like telling myself you can quit after the next mile and then after that be like, just kidding, you have to keep going.
Keep going, fatty.
You got to get home.
Yeah. Yeah. So part of it for me, I think, is like this mind game of like, well, you paid $50 for that shirt. You have to go wear it.
You have to go sweat in it.
Yeah, you better earn that money. You know,
yeah.
You better earn it. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah, I can see that. But I think, I don't know. I think it's like, I don't know, the first day of a new job or school or something. You know, if you have something new on, you think, well, you know, I'll do okay with this. But no, I think it's okay to be comfortable and be, you know, to feel good about what you're wearing when you work out.
Yeah.
You know, and I run by myself. I do all my exercise myself, but I still like to have, you know, the fun stuff to wear.
Yeah.
I bought a workout shirt once.
Oh, did you?
Well, there you go. So we've talked about
even Mike.
Yeah. We've talked about the clothes, the bracelets. One of the things that I hear a lot in among my friends and in the crowd that we cover at FD is there's always the hot new workout, the hot diet. Now, I'm juicing, I'm cleansing, I'm doing Pilates, I'm doing bar method.
That's why you look so good.
I'm in spring.
You do all those things.
I'm not, but I like
it's
to talk
fabulous,
about them.
Let me tell you.
In the span of a week, every friend I had suddenly became gluten intolerant.
Oh, see, I will say the whole gluten free, that's like my pet peeve because I think it was who's the talk show host that just goes out and talks to the like people and whoever it was. Conan maybe it was him.
But absolutely nobody will get it.
So. Okay, no. But anyway, but he went out and talked to people and asked them what would gluten free if they were going gluten free. Oh yes, I'm going gluten free. Well, what is gluten, you know?
Exactly.
And there's like this blank look. I said, well, I think it's going to help me lose weight, which it doesn't. It has nothing to do with that at all.
I don't know
what
it is, but I'm eliminating it.
Yeah. And as long as I'm on my little soapbox, juicing, I just think that's just a bit much too. But I say eat the orange, you know?
I as someone who doesn't like to eat fruit, and I don't really know what's wrong with me, but I buy juice now, and it works. Uh-huh. Like, it makes me, like, I feel better.
Good.
But I don't just drink juice. Like, I'm not using it as a diet.
You're not cleansing.
Right.
Okay.
My problem was I'd go to, like, Inwood Village and spend half an hour getting my $10 juice thing, and then come back and have lunch and have snacks. I mean, it was never a meal replacement or a fasting thing. It was just like, oh, it's a refreshing 1,200 calorie
snack. Yeah. It was like with Starbucks. Like, you can go in there and Starbucks and get, you know, 600 calories for for some kind of a coffee drink,
right,
like extra whip or whatever.
Yeah, but I will say about those bar workouts, I went to one. I did a story about work.
Did you buy the
boutique
outfit?
Workout.
The
gym.
Beer segment is next. different bar. Bar. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
That's my new workout. I do the bar workout.
That's the
now.
Other bar
again.
Method.
Yeah. But I went to it. It's a weird muscle group that I would never use otherwise.
Is
and
it
I was
like
sore.
Did you like it?
No.
Oh,
no. No. It was it's the most awkward workout I've ever done in my life. They like it's all women and you're like up against the wall and you're moving parts of your body you didn't even know you had. And
it's like like
don't have
little,
a license to
tiny,
use.
Tiny movements.
Tiny
right?
movements. Yeah. I probably did all of them wrong. I mean, there's no way to tell if you're doing it right or wrong.
Was
and
it like a series of clinchings or something?
Yes. Yes.
And then I've done, like, you know, some really slow squats. I've never done it, but just from what I've heard.
Yeah.
No, I think it would be.
And you're all
hard.
Look. The worst part is you're all for a lot of the workout or the one that I went to anyway. You're all like up against the wall and you're all looking at each other doing these workouts. It's so uncomfortable. I don't recommend it. That's why I avoid most classes.
Speaking as an editor for a print publication, it's a very photogenic workout. We always get good photos when we do stories on bar workouts because everybody looks fabulous. You know, they've got, you know, they're standing at a bar. They look like, you know, like they're doing ballet. That and yoga, I think, a very photogenic workout.
You haven't seen me do yoga, so on.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So if you have to be looking at each other doing a workout, I think I'd rather be there than like at, you know, like pumping iron or something. I think that can get
To your point, all that effort, is it improving our body image or are we just becoming obsessed about something else?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about it with an interesting piece that The Observer did this week. we're used to seeing the D magazine, Most Beautiful Women in Dallas and so forth. And The Observer did a response to that.
Sure. Yeah. I got really angry last week. Honestly, I just got really angry. And I thought to myself, why do we let this totally a tangent in a way, but it ties back to I got really frustrated. I was like, why do we spend so much time rewarding women based on what they look like instead of talking about like what they do on a daily basis? And I think in that way, working out can feel the same way. It's like, why do I go to this bar class where I'm not having an effective workout? What am I trying to attain? What is that impulse? Instead of saying, well, what I know works for me and makes me feel good is to run. Why would I do anything else if that's good for you? And, you know, what is that that we're trying to attain? Mm-hmm. It's interesting. So yeah, so we last week I decided to take sort of just a gentle approach to feeling frustrated and angry, and we launched a 10 Brilliant Dallas Women series that the women are all beautiful, but they're not. It's not about that.
Yeah.
So. Yeah,
and that was brilliant. I nominate you for the brilliance of it because I saw that before I knew the person who had written it, it showed up on my Facebook feed, and I said, "Oh, how nice that somebody is countering this." No offense to Dee, but it's kind of the idea of doing beautiful people is
a beauty pageant.
Shallow. It's a beauty pageant, and it's marginalized. It's all those bad words. And so I was glad to see that. I think it's different from what Leslie was talking about. I think we make a point in the health stories, Leslie's very good about this. I mean, your workout and what you're doing should be about yourself, and it should be about taking care of yourself. And there are a lot of good positive reasons to do that besides how you look on the outside. And So I think it's a different thing, but than reducing women to just beauty.
But. Right. I do take yoga. That's the only the only class that I do because I just can't get the coordination, to do things with other people. But in yoga, they always say, don't look at your neighbor. And I've really kind of learned not to do that, which is a good thing. And thank heavens no one's probably looking at me either.
I joined Sunstone a few months ago, and the thing they say at the end of every class is, thank yourself for showing up,
Yeah, this is something you do for you. Yeah, I like that. I think that's good. But you've probably found this with yoga too, but I think that probably with working out too is that, I mean, really probably one of the main reasons I do it is because it makes me feel better mentally, I think it just really keeps me sane. And, it's nice to have some defined muscles here and there, but really I think it's to know that my heart's in good shape and all that, but I think it just helps so much.
Yeah.
So much.
When I got angry last week about the whole thing, I went for a run.
I think that's a very healthy way to do it.
You can keep working out and get healthy, but keep up with Leslie Barker on Twitter at @OLeslieBarker.
Oh, Leslie Barker.
Oh, Leslie Barker.
Leslie Barker, yes.
And by the way, the handsome man with you in your photograph on Twitter is actually your son.
He is my son, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How old is he?
No? He's 21.
And is he single for all the beautiful women out there?
He is indeed. He's a senior in college, and he likes working out also.
He's majoring in... very fit and very handsome. And when I've occasionally seen the shots of you guys on Facebook or whatever, it makes me feel really fat and out of shape. So, because you guys are both in such amazing shape and do marathons together. So,
we are going to do a half coming up. So.
Yeah. And I happen to know that he speaks German. So, we have as we know, German is a great language for motivating you. He could yell at you. You must run faster, Christopher. No.
See? So, there you go. Dating recommendations also. Yeah. Mixed media. All right. Thank you, Leslie.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Hey,
set low your expectations. The secret to happiness is there.
All right, that song was by Bethan. So we're going to move into our final segment with the lovely Tina Riccardi. Actually, I shouldn't say lovely. We just talked about...
She's brilliant.
Brilliant. That was the whole point of our second segment.
She can be lovely, too. There's nothing wrong with that. You're lovely, Tina.
Well, thank you, guys.
Lovely, brilliant, smart. Yes. My head's like, woo.
So Tina Riccardi is kind of the champ of craft beer in Dallas. You have been following this. You're on the scene. You're doing the research. You're drinking the beer. Tina,
specialty.
Exactly. What is going on? What's been happening in the scene? Why is it so huge all of a sudden?
It is really the keywords there are all of the sudden. I started here working for Pegasus News in 2012, and I kind of accidentally fell into the role as craft beer writer, craft beer drinker, if you will. It was the first year.
Played, by the way.
Yeah.
You say one person in this room is winning.
Right.
Yeah. Career choices.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's not me.
It was the very first year that the Untapped Music and Beer Festival had happened, and I was like, all right, I'll go. I'll interview a few local brewers and watch the bands. It won't be a big deal. turns out that was sort of the birth of this new wave of microbrewing. It started, I guess, in 2004 with Rahr and Sons in Fort Worth. And then Franconia Brewing Company opened in McKinney in 2008. But that was basically it. In 2010, we had two breweries. Now we're looking at more than 35, with 15 opening this year. And a lot of it has to do with the laws. A lot of it just has to do with new
Say those numbers again.
I know, that's pretty amazing.
Wow.
It's insane. So in 2010, there were two breweries. It was just Rahr and Franconia. Mm-hmm. 2011 is when Deep Ellum opened. Lakewood was 2012, but Peticola's. And now, this year, we'll have 35 by the end of the year.
Whoa.
Wow, that's impressive.
Actually, maybe a little more, depending on if some of them hit the, you know, before 2016 deadline.
That's great. And are they all making, I mean, are there enough beer drinkers to go around?
Actually, yeah. The number of...
That's not surprising.
Amazing.
And, you
How
know,
many in this room? Raise your hand.
Yeah. All hands up.
One of the amazing things is Texas still lags behind because there are so many people. So the number of breweries per capita is substantially lower than most places in the U.S. I think we're somewhere in the 40s out of the 50 states. But in North Texas specifically, the ratio is even bigger because we are such a bigger area. So we may have 35 breweries. Actually, what fascinates me about this is that, you know, the majority of them are not in Dallas or Fort Worth proper. They're opening in all the little suburbs in between to cater to, you know, not only are some of the laws easier there to move and change, but also catering to these sort of family environments where people want a local pub where they can drink the beer that's brewed on site.
Tell me, where would you go for that? Because I come from, my home state is Colorado, which was like
beer drinking state.
It is, and I know absolutely nothing about the scene there, except that my friends are always going to places like they were craft beer when that was up and coming, and now they're into the growlers where they just kind of this is their thing. They go out with their. They go to their neighborhood tavern and get the local beer, and it sounds so good. Where would you go around here for that?
So the funny thing, there's a difference in the laws between Texas and Colorado, which is kind of unfortunate. So you can go to a specific bar. There are growler bars, Lakewood Growler, Crafting Growler. There is Taps and Caps in Louisville and a couple of to come in Denton. But if you are a brew pub, say, you know, Collective Brewing Project is a pretty small operation, they're under a brew pub license, so they can fill growlers as well. But if you're looking at your bigger ones, Deep Ellum Brewing Company, Texas Ale Project, Community Beer Company, they are legally not allowed to sell you growlers on site. They cannot sell you beer to go on site, sure.
Really? And well, that's just wrong.
Sorry, Mike. Right? It's pretty interesting. The laws are really twisted, and I think that's...
Yeah, I know. I thought that was a setup question because I remember you writing about the growlers, and I thought, well, see, this is obviously just taking off. So the laws sound like they're still completely messed up.
Oh, they're still completely messed up, and if you talk to any local brewer, that'll be the first thing that they tell you. You know, Texas's reputation and unofficial motto has always been about 10 years behind, but our laws are even... I know, but our laws are even further than that. Only in 2013 did breweries legally earn the right to start selling directly to the consumer. You know, the old model was you pay a $10 entrance fee and then you get three, you know, quote-unquote complimentary beers because breweries couldn't directly sell to you, the consumer. Law said, no way. So in 2013, that changed, and that was a monumental step forward. That's why you're seeing more microbreweries open with tap rooms. That's the reason they're able to become bars and stay open 7 days a week. So 2013 was a big year, but there's still a lot to be done.
Well, it's really funny to me, too, because this is now that the laws have changed, I guess. This is what I, when I travel, this is what I go and I do. I look for what is the local brewery I can go visit. It's so much more interesting than going to.
Not the local library?
Well, I do that, too.
Oh, my gosh. I just solved it. A brew pub at the library.
Yeah.
That's
I mean,
it.
We did this
actually,
I think all of society. Okay. I got to go.
I would go to the library if there were beer there.
Absolutely.
For sure.
It works for Wild Detectives. Why not the library?
Well, you know, that's a very good point.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and there, the library.
There, we got Wild Detectives in to this episode.
Well, I knew it was going to happen.
It's become a thing. They're on every week.
No, but it's, you know, that's sort of a, it's become a tourist thing. Mm-hmm. It's funny to me that it takes, like, what is wrong with the Texas legislature so they can't see, especially with this huge uprising, that this is so good for the economy?
Right. And, you know, that's one of the images that needs to be changed, because we still live in sort of a pre-prohibition mentality. That most of the laws restricting breweries and distribution and where and why you can drink date back to, you know, Bible Belt, we want beer out of here. There's a great book on the history of it. It's called Brian Brown and Paul Hightower, the authors. So if you just look them up, it's called North Texas Beer, and then it's got something after the semicolon. But
way to show me up. I know in the book.
Yeah.
I should know the name. But yeah, and that's the thing.
Well, I guess I now know the answer to the question. It's lobbyists. It's the lobbyists
True.
Who are, yeah.
Can't
I
we
mean,
take money from politics, the libraries and put them toward the, no?
Now, we're going to get a bad review today because we're talking about politics.
That's true.
We're going to get a bad, yeah. Should I make, could I tell my, the first Texas beer joke I learned when I moved here 20 years ago?
Oh, boy.
Do you know this one? No.
Get ready, Brian Elledge.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. No, it was about Lone Star Beer, mm-hmm. and nobody here drinks it. Well, so anyhow, so for a while that was all anybody knew about Texas beer, right? So mm-hmm. have you heard? Tell me if you've heard this one. So this guy, it's a visitor. It's about someone visits Texas and has a Lone Star, and says, "Now that's a real interesting taste. I think I'll send it off and figure out what went into it." And sends a sample off to the lab and gets a message back. It says, "I'm sorry, sir, but your horse is diabetic."
Oh my gosh,
that was a pretty good one. That was funny.
No, but that's how I that's actually how I feel about Lone Star, and so it's been actually has been the new tech with that as my background and my firm belief. There are some really, really good beers locally, and I'm not just saying that.
What do you love?
Yes,
Kimmy?
That's what it is.
So I'm
really, it wasn't just to tell that very bad joke, but I was trying to set you up for saying that Texas beer was not. It has been terrible. I mean, Shiner's good, but Lone Star is awful, and
you know, Lone Star isn't even brewed or canned or distributed from Texas anymore.
No,
really,
Milwaukee.
No kidding.
Yeah. Sorry to burst your bubble.
That explains it.
Well, that explains it.
But there are a lot of horses
New
in
York
Milwaukee.
City.
Get a rope.
But there are a ton of great breweries and beers around here. Every time I go to the bar, I try to try something I haven't had before, mostly because the more new breweries, the more that open up, the more new beers there are. But one that I always keep going back to is the Community Beer Company's Mosaic IPA. If you're looking to try an IPA, it is probably the best one in the area.
I don't even like IPAs, and I like that beer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
What else? I mean, Pedicle's Velvet Hammer, a classic, if you can call it that. Four years old, a classic.
Yeah.
Also, let's see. A lot of them are super experimental. You've got Martin House Brewing Company, who every single month releases a new recipe that's just a limited time offer. They only brew, 30 barrels of it, put it out in the marketplace. And right now I can't get enough of their Salsa Verde. It's really spicy.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's spicy. I don't know what the base beer is, but I can't get enough of it.
Where would you go to hang out? Like, say I had a really cool hip friend like Lauren. I don't, except in here. It's nice. That's why I like being on the podcast.
We're Facebook friends now.
But it's nice to be like to get cool people to talk to me. I have to come on a podcast. But say, let's pretend in this alternate universe that I have a cool hip friend who wants to sample the actual scene. I mean, what's the best place to go locally, if we're going to hang out and try a bunch?
Sure. There are actually a couple places that come to mind. Braindead Brewing in Deep Ellum is where I've been spending a lot of time lately.
We know where to find you.
Yes. Actually, I think that last week I went there twice.
You should tell your editor you need to go to every single one and spend an afternoon at every single one and write descriptions of them.
I actually have to do that for a feature coming up for North Texas Beer Week. So
brilliant.
I will be doing a lot
Sweet.
Of that.
It's a living.
Yeah.
But Braindead's great. They brew their own beer on site, but they also serve some of the best in the nation, the Deschutes and also the best locally. If you're looking strictly for local, there's no better place than Luck in Trinity Groves. Mm-hmm. They only serve DFW beers.
All their beers are $5 too, which I love the consistency.
Amazing. Yes. All beers $5 all the time. Craft and Growler is another great destination. Their flights are amazing. They also have a bottle shop too, so you can take home some Dogfish Head if you're craving that.
You can even get some weird beer food pairings, too.
Yeah.
I remember you were reading about donuts and beers or something.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that was a thing from Luck. So they decided to team up with Glaze Donut Works in Deep Ellum, which makes crazy delicious donuts, artisan, if you will. And they created a flight and didn't think it would be a big deal, but the first time they did it, people were lining up. They opened at 11 a.m., and they had people sitting down at the tables at like 10:30.
Wow. Were they all like Canadian or something? Because isn't that a stereotype, you know, that the donuts and the beer and maybe some back bacon or something?
Oh, I've never heard that. Bacon. But since then, they've done...
I feel fat again.
Yeah, right? On God Live, we have a tag, hashtag, this will make you fat. Yeah. I post under it a lot.
Totally.
But Brain Dead Brewing, actually, to give them another shout out, just started their brunch. And every Saturday, they offer a bacon and beer flight with house-cured meat. Ooh. And it rotates weekly, too. So I can't even tell you what to expect.
Nice. All right.
Well, and I would give a shout out, too. And this is, unfortunately, it's how you look at it. The Strange Ways has incredible beer selection, mm-hmm. although not primarily local. But I think that
right.
I think it's an interesting problem that I would face as a drinker. I would sometimes not want local beer. And
right.
I mean, 5 years ago that wouldn't be a problem I could possibly have. But now I'm like, well, where can I go to try weird beers from elsewhere? And I've always found that Strange Ways has really surprising and interesting beers.
Sure, and they're always in touch with the new breweries that are coming to town. You know, when Carbach Brewing in Houston came and started distributing DFW, it was a pretty big deal. This was only a couple months ago, and went there. They had 10 taps dedicated to their beers and, you know, special one-offs that they were releasing. And so Strange Ways is also really in touch with that. I think that is becoming a problem. It's like DFW doesn't always want to drink local beer, but you go, you know, you always have your staples. The Moth is not going to settle for just DFW beer. A lot of the places, you know, like Sundown at Granada, they have a bottle, 80 bottles that, you know, most of them are not local. They only have 5 taps, though, so it depends on how you like your beer. Anywhere you go, though, you're likely to find craft beer now, no matter where it's from, which is really, I think, a step up.
If you or anybody listening comes across a local source for a decent alt beer, you are to call me immediately. You
okay.
know this, right? We've
sure.
had this conversation.
Oh, man.
Send them a tweet.
Yes, yeah. We'll do.
Tell your craft brewing friends to get on the case.
Okay.
Because Mike is waiting.
Put out a call for sure.
If you want to grab a cold one with Tini Riccardi and call it research, then you can. She does. Then you can start by following her on Twitter at Tini Wristwatch,
yes,
which I love that name.
Thanks.
Tini Wristwatch.
I made that in college.
I love that. You can also read her work at guidelive.com, the entertainment website of the Dallas Morning News.
Happiness is there, contrary to all you think. The key is understanding. Among those in service of time, soon you will be home again. See from the outside.
Ah, that was the amazing Telegraph Canyon, which sort of completes my all show long tout, but I'm going to have another one later because I can. We're moving on to touts, the portion of our show where each of us recommends one thing we are reading, watching, clicking on, listening to, or just plain obsessed with. Lauren Smart, can you kick us off?
Yeah, sure. I have really, really two very disparate touts for this week. I just started reading Purity by Jonathan Franzen,
mm-hmm.
and I know he's sort of a polarizing
I
author.
Know.
But
thanks, Oprah Book Club.
Right. Yeah. But it's really, really, I just think his writing is so good. And the character of Pip is... I have found so many things about her that I think are so me. So
right.
I really have been enjoying that. And I also am going to say that I think Justin Bieber, his new single, I think it's really good.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
The torches, they're coming for you. Yeah.
Was it the tears, Lauren? Did the tears get you?
I did not watch the VMAs, but I heard about that. No,
the puppy dog tears.
Everyone in the studio is laughing at me right now, but I really think it's fun. I think it's pop. I think it's a pop song, and I think it's actually a lot more mature in a way than some of his other music, and I'm liking it.
I got a couple of Bieber songs on my iPod. I won't deny that. But only
that's
two.
That's my tell.
I would.
Yeah, I should. You're right, but here we go. I'm being vulnerable. Mike Michelle, what you touting?
Yeah, well, you know, the topic of the day we start off with was libraries, and so the only I had to tout, it's a 60-something-year-old book, 50-something-year-old book that you probably read in high school, Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, it always comes to mind whenever we're talking about libraries being in trouble, but the I reread it last year. It was the big read for Dallas. So a lot of people probably reread it. But if you haven't, pick it up. It's still, you know, every time you see the new TVs are getting bigger this year, or that there's a new thing to stick in your ear. And more important, relevant to Lauren's story, Ray Bradbury wrote the story that became Fahrenheit 451. He was looking for a quiet place to leave his house where he had two small children running around. At the bottom of the library at UCLA, there were rental typewriters, so he wrote it. You could rent a half hour for a dime. So he went back there, and about a week and $9.80 later, he had written what would become Fahrenheit 451.
That is so
cool. Let's hear it for libraries.
I have to do some division and figure out how many hours he spent there for multiplication.
If only they'd had craft beer. Tini Riccardi.
All right. Well, my tout, I don't know if you guys know me that well, but So You Think You Can Dance? Season finale is next week, and I'm really sad because that means that Mondays are boring again. So. But it's been a fabulous season. I've been so stoked. We actually had a guy from Dallas on there make it into the top 10. I think he was cut the week they went down to 6 people, but that means that he'll be going on tour with the top 10, and they'll be in Grand Prairie in October. And if you guys love me, you'll get me tickets for early Christmas gift.
Are you a dancer?
I was when I was a kid, from like ages 2 to 18. Cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
There's your fitness routine right there.
Right? Yes, no, I venture towards yoga more these days because I can still be flexible.
Yeah, that's good. Exactly. I can't be flexible at all. But,
All right, Leslie Barker.
Okay, I'll give two. I'll give a shout out to the Jewish Community Center because they always have just really interesting classes. Like I was looking at yoga, not for me. I was just looking at their list.
not for me.
Yoga shred.
For a friend.
And for Lauren, perhaps yoga bar burn.
Oh, that sounds just so great.
Yes,
thank you, Leslie.
meditation vibrations, which I thought sounded kind of interesting too.
Oh,
so.
Dear God.
Is that licensed?
And then my other shout out is for Saucony Cohesion Shoes, which I really like. They're a neutral shoe if you wear that. And I found them I think as cheap as $35 or something.
Really?
Wow. Yes. And a slight aside, I just got an email the other day from somebody who'd said, I don't know, some study from somewhere said, was talking about that the people who buy more expensive running shoes are more likely to have issues with them or complain about them.
Oh,
so
I saw
I'm
that.
All about the, did you see that? So I'm all about the inexpensive.
I thought the more money I paid, the more weight I could lose without actually using them.
Yeah. Yeah, just put them on, walk around or something. So yeah. There you have it.
I love that. Well, I'm going to do a twofer at the end that I'm not supposed to. If another cool, great workout place is Terlingo Cycle, which is run by John Terlingo, who is a great trainer who came to Dallas from L.A., where Nicole Kidman, Charlize Theron were his past clients.
Whatever.
Important to you. He kind of all the cool kids go to his spin class over on Cedar Springs. And what makes him really unique is he basically is also a DJ and kind of an Oprah type, because you get a good workout and he plays these very meticulously crafted music mixes and that kind of take you on this journey as you're spinning and on your workout. And people have been known to burst into tears.
This sounds like a cult.
To have daddy issues, to get a breakthrough on a relationship. I mean, it's an experience. But he is very amazing and talented. So John Terlingo.
Great name, too.
So that's basically it. And if you want to go to the show for all the songs we've been playing, that's Saturday night at Dan Silverleaf in Denton. Tickets are $15. It starts at 7 o'clock. And you can get all the info at dansilverleaf.com. You will find links to some of the things we've talked about today on our show page at guidelive.com, the entertainment website of the morning news. Drop us an email at mixedmedia@dallasnews.com. Send us a tweet at mixedmediapod. You can now subscribe to our show in iTunes. and leave us a review, hopefully a nice one.
A nice review, please.
A nice review.
Use proper grammar.
That's right. Mixed Media is engineered by Brian Elledge and produced by me. We'll be back next Thursday with a new episode. Until then, for Lauren Smart, Mike Marshall, Leslie Barker, and Tini Riccardi, I'm Christopher Wynn. We thank you for joining us.